Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, here are your hosts, Light Beer, Chris Clements, and Dark Money, Sean Noble.
And we're back. Another episode of Light Beer, Dark Money. I'm Sean Noble.
And I'm Chris Clements.
I guess...
Good day.
We say that we do this intro every time, but the intro talks, says the title, and says our names.
Yeah.
So I don't know why I do that. We're just repeating ourselves.
Well, I know.
We're wasting people's time.
But light beer, dark money. So the dark money guy goes first, and I, you know.
Which doesn't make sense. If we're light beer, dark money, you should go first.
Well, that, okay. We can do that sometime.
But what I'm saying is I'm just repeating.
We've gotten into a rhythm.
I'm repeating what people have just heard. So I'm wasting their time. Because they know that it's Sean Noble and Chris Clements, and
Chris
it's light
Clements
beer and
Sean
dark
Noble.
Money.
You know, people love the title of our podcast, by the way.
Well, some
I get a lot of good feedback.
Most do. Well, what, everyone likes the light beer.
Well, they
everyone likes the dark money.
Dark money is the foundation of our politics these days.
Well, it's
just
the foundation
the latest...
of politics from the beginning. I mean, people don't remember or fail to remember that the Federalist Papers were anonymous.
Yes, they were.
For a reason.
Yeah.
Because they wanted people to focus on what was said, not who was saying it, because that's what mattered. I mean, James Madison was a Virginian. These were published in New York. If New Yorkers were reading something that was written by James Madison, they would have discounted it.
Yeah. They would have never read
it. Who's this Southerner? We don't care.
Yeah.
But because he was anonymous, his ideas were critical in the founding and forming of the country and getting the Constitution ratified. So...
You know, if we just had more people drinking light beer and spending more dark money, this country would be a better place.
I don't know about the beer part.
Yeah.
I'll definitely go for that.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe not light beer. Unfortunately, I mean, I was talking about this with something this morning. The beer industry is in the tank. So
is it?
It's been on decline for 10 years. And
so you got out at the right time.
We did get out at the right time.
That was over 5 years ago.
I was, 6 years ago.
Yeah, there you go.
We did get out at the right time because Anheuser-Busch, with all due respect to them, is a mess. They were once like one of the greatest marketing companies known to man, and now their marketing is really...
Meh.
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 Not like it was.
Did they retire the Clydesdales?
They haven't retired the Clydesdales.
They trot them out just for Super Bowl.
But they did shut down some of their Clydesdale facilities. There's less of them now. I don't even know how many there are now. Might just be Grants Farm in St. Louis. And, you know, they've basically given up on Budweiser. During spring training, you know, Budweiser was or is one of the major sponsors of Major League Baseball. You know, going around to, I went to three different stadiums here in Phoenix. You can't find just a regular Budweiser.
Really?
Can't find one. I looked.
I'm assuming that might be a
brewery issue. It could be a wholesaler issue. Don't know.
Huh.
I'm not a wholesaler anymore.
That's right.
You know? But in the aggregate, you know, the big craze for several years was craft brewers. There's like 6,000 craft brewers in America now. And you could pretty much count that only about 10% of those are any good.
Yeah.
And even the ones that are existing, they better have good food if they're serving food because their beer is normally not very good.
Not very good.
And so all it's done is gone from brands, you know, beer brands to beer styles. So people don't even look for brands anymore. Like, oh, give me a lager, give me an IPA. They don't really care. So it's unfortunate. And meanwhile, the industry is, you know, just stagnating.
Who knew the beer would become snobby?
Yeah, who knew? It's pretty predictable.
It's as bad as wine.
Who knew that dark money snobby?
No.
No, it's the people's money.
It's the people's money. Yeah. So I recently read.
Let's get to the point of our podcast.
Yeah, we can rant and ramble on for hours. This particular episode is going to be focused on the Kennedy assassination. So I recently read Stephen King's 11/22/63, It's a novel. It's not a horror. Well, I mean, it's kind of horror, but not in the typical Stephen King genre. This was written a number of years ago. I'm not going to give it away, but there's a time travel element.
Oh.
It's very interesting.
Sounds like a good movie.
And I think they did make it into some kind of a special show or something. But so the interesting thing about what he says, and so this is at the end of the end of the book. He, I don't know where I'm trying to find this, but he talks about all the conspiracy theories, and he's convinced that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. Yeah. And he claims that that's just self-evident.
Okay.
Which I find very interesting, because in 1991, Oliver Stone put out a movie called JFK, and that was riveting to me. I thought Kevin Costner did a fantastic job in that movie. I mean, there was some pretty outlandish stuff, but
that movie had an effect on me as well. But it seemed that it kind of threw everything up at the screen in mm-hmm. terms of all the different conspiracy theories and how they all interrelated. For those of you know listeners who have not seen it, and I mean between the mob and
The CIA,
FBI. And the Cubans and the Russians and all these different theories that have percolated around for several decades. He kind of threw it all up on the screen, and then you know, both factual and dramatized, and allowed you to sort of make a choice.
Yeah.
Maybe what you believed or not.
One of my favorite characters in that movie.
Including that he acted alone.
Yeah. One of my favorite characters in that movie was Donald Sutherland, who was kind of the...
He played like the
guy who
clandestine
was, yeah.
CIA guy.
He's like... Why? You got to figure out, you know, the who and the how is just the distraction to keep the public occupied. But the question is why? Why was Kennedy killed? And that really goes to the core of what Oliver Stone has done now. So since 1991, there have been thousands and thousands and thousands of documents released from the archives. Because there was an act in 1992 that opened. It was the Archives Act. They had hearings. They passed a bill that said these things have to be, you know, released. And then Biden recently ordered the release of additional documents. So since the movie that Oliver Stone did, which he had a lot of information that was critical, because since the Warren Commission... Between the Warren Commission in 1991, the Zapruder film was made mm-hmm. public, which makes it abundantly clear that there was some shot fired from the front, not just the back. And
from
a lot
the
of people,
knoll.
Yeah, and a lot of people coming forward, you know, the guys that were involved in the initial treatment of the president at the hospital, who describe. You know, wounds that would be, you know, the back of his head being missing, basically, implying an exit wound. It's just remarkable to me how important this was in our history and how much cover-up there's been on this. And I'm convinced of it. One of the things that I read this book by Stephen King, which was a great read. There's lots of fascinating information, but he writes from the perspective that Oswald acted alone, but I just watched on Showtime Stephen King's JFK Revisited. It's a documentary. It's almost 2 hours. That goes into a lot of the stuff that's come out since he made the movie. And one of the things that I didn't realize, I guess, and maybe it was in the movie, I can't remember, was that JFK fired Alan Dulles,
mm-hmm.
Removed him from the CIA right before he was killed because of the whole Bay of pigs fiasco and the lying that the CIA did. And JFK wanted to dismantle the CIA. So there's pretty good motive there when you think about, you know, who would have done it and why. Well, the CIA, Kennedy was starting to expose a lot of the operations that they had, you know, wanted to have been a part of.
Yeah.
Whether it was, you know, Vietnam or France or, you know, I mean, there's just a number of different, the Congo. And so I would suggest, if people like good fiction that has a time travel element, 11/22/63 by Stephen King is worth reading. But I definitely would suggest, if you have any interest in what really happened with Kennedy, that they watch the Oliver Stone documentary JFK Revisited on Showtime. Because
now, do they come to any sort of conclusion on JFK Revisited?
Oh, I think it's the CIA did this. That this was a CIA operation. And they point out that there were two other instances.
Because Lee Harvey Oswald, that they've maintained, was a CIA operative.
Right. That he was set up as the
past. Spent time in Russia.
He was a defector, but he was likely defected as a result of an operation the CIA was running. And, you know, they point out that when he was handing out pro-Castro pamphlets, the address he was using was an anti-Castro operation. I mean, it just, there's the documentary is definitely worth watching. The autopsy issues are critical. There's just so many, and then there was a threat in Chicago that actually was severe enough that they canceled the presidential trip there. Threat in Tampa, which they ended up canceling. And they had similar patsies in those two places.
Okay.
And when the Secret Service guy tried to bring this up, he was trumped up on charges and drummed out of the service. The whole Arlen Specter magic bullet theory has always bugged me. I'm not a firearms expert. I've shot guns all my life. But this bullet is pristine, and it's gone through two bodies and, you know, a wrist and a leg. And
The magic bullet thing I've never understood. There's too many questions still unanswered. I've never understood why we don't just have a full reveal of the documents.
And maybe
have they believed that if the truth were known. And even, I mean, the Warren Commission, of course, was established shortly thereafter, when the assassination, and established that there was one shooter with one set of motives. And no one's ever believed that.
Right. And not even, and
no
and
one.
What's interesting, and this points out in the documentary, they've got three of the commissioners from the Warren Commission who disagreed with the idea that there was one shooter. I mean, it just, you know, seven members, three of them disagree, four of them, the fourth one was, you know, later kind of questions it. But the problem was you had Alan Dulles on the Warren Commission, the guy, the ex-CIA head, who, I mean, there's no way we're going to get the truth if the CIA carried out the operation and the ex-CIA head.
They're there to make sure that everything.
Yeah, make sure that the inconvenient facts.
And the film, the Zapruder film, if memory serves, and I haven't watched it in a long time, but it shows a couple of things. It shows, one, the president getting hit, and he bends forward, right?
Yeah, he definitely gets hit, and he's like holding his neck.
His neck. And then the second shot rings out, and it hits him in the head, and he goes backwards.
Yeah.
And that's when Jackie starts climbing over the...
Right, she climbs into the trunk to pick up a chunk of his brain, his head. That doesn't happen if the shot comes from behind.
Now, what is your opinion of those who believe that LBJ was the orchestrator of all this? That's in the movie too.
Yeah,
but it's not.
They don't.
It's sort of alluded to,
and it's not.
And there's some people who have really strong opinions about that.
Yeah, they.
Because LBJ was no Daisy.
He was a very corrupt
politician. He was no Daisy.
I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, the master of the Senate. Yeah, he was the master of the Senate because he, you know, he's so corrupt.
They don't delve as much into that in the documentary. I think that, but he clearly was allies with the people who were behind this, the CIA, because he was the one who reversed. I mean, Kennedy had the orders in place to reduce troop levels in Vietnam, or our advisors in Vietnam, and immediately within days, Johnson reversed all that, and we escalated in Vietnam, and
and ironically enough, that ruined LBJ's presidency.
Yeah,
it totally completely destroyed it.
I mean, it's interesting because a lot of people, you know, you think through the players of the Warren Commission. Gerald Ford was on the Warren Commission, later becomes vice president and then president. You had, as we talked about, Dulles. You had a couple of senators. There was, and then Arlen Specter was hired by the commission as one of their counsels. And the guy who came up with the magic bullet theory, who went on to be a senator from Pennsylvania. And, you know, you start thinking through, the CIA was at the verge of being dismantled.
Mm-hmm.
They'd already had their budget cut 20% in the president's budget. And Kennedy wanted to dismantle the CIA. And yet, you look at what's happened since the assassination of Kennedy. LBJ becomes president. He's clearly allies with Dulles and others in the CIA. Then Nixon gets elected. Gerald Ford, who's on the Warren Commission, is his vice president. He becomes president. Oh, and by the way, Gerald Ford's chief of staff was Dick Cheney. And then you have George H.W. Bush running for president and then loses in the primary and becomes Reagan's vice president, former CIA director.
Yeah, under Nixon.
And then he becomes president. And, you know, the Clinton years.
So will you're, I mean, let me see if I can follow the dots that you're placing down. What you're claiming is a lot of this has been orchestrated through history.
Yeah, and the CIA has been protected as a result. You know, they got rid of the president who was threatening them, and they've never been threatened since. No one has ever talked about getting rid of the CIA since. I don't think that's an accident.
Hmm. Are we even safe by saying this on an open mic?
I don't know. Maybe not.
Because we know they're listening, right, Robin? We know the CIA is pretty much everywhere.
Well, they are everywhere.
National Intelligence Agency listens to your phone calls, listens to everything. Just ask Rand Paul. He'll tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's an interesting correlation.
Well, it keeps going.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure it keeps
George
going.
George H.W. Bush, and then you have George Bush who happens to... So Dick Cheney does the search for vice president. I think figures out that none of them are sufficiently pro national security enough, and maneuvers it so that George Bush asked him to be the vice president, who had been with Ford.
Yeah, he was leading the search, right?
Yeah,
yeah, I'd forgotten about that. That's right.
Yeah,
imagine that.
Imagine that. You know, I just think that.
Well, there are people who believe that, you know, the military-industrial complex, as it's called, is indeed the most powerful force in the country. And and there are people who even believe to this day the reason why we are clamoring for a war in Ukraine and wanting to arm is to keep that, keep the CIA and the military-industrial complex going.
Well, I mean,
because it's profitable. Look, war is profitable.
Look at the people who are the most, like, you know, the most vocal about either the no-fly zone or juicing the arms to.
They have the most to gain.
Yeah.
In terms of.
Liz Cheney is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
No. The daughter of.
Yeah, and look how much money that she's brought in for supposedly a failed congressional race.
Yeah. I mean, she's raised a lot of money for a Wyoming congressional race.
For a Wyoming congressional race, one congressperson, and for somebody who is, I mean, part of a commission that who knows where it'll go.
Yeah, yeah.
That's purely political. That's all I'll say.
Right. So I think it's worth people delving into this. You know, I'm not saying you have to, but if you have any questions about power, because remember, Dwight Eisenhower talked about he was the first one to mention as president the military-industrial complex, and then Kennedy. So
well, he
days
said that's
later,
what we have to be
careful
and aware and afraid of.
Right.
Yeah, that and was Eisenhower.
That was his farewell address to the nation.
That's correct.
A few days later, Kennedy gives his inauguration address, in which he talks about a world of peace. And I think the CIA was like, that doesn't fit our.
Well, the CIA, and you can put the FBI in there. What was that?
Oh, some kind of shaking of the building.
Well, maybe it's the CIA.
They're on to us.
Well, I mean, you can put the FBI in there with RFK's clashing with J. Edgar.
Yeah.
You can put, you know, people, I guess institutions that had benefited from what took place in World War II with the growth of government and had the most to lose.
Yes.
With the Kennedys. Yeah, there's a lot to digest there. And the fascination with the Kennedys is an interesting one. You know, John F. Kennedy today would be a conservative Republican. By any stretch of the imagination. He was for tax cuts. He's for less regulation. And yet he was a Democrat. And the only reason why, if you go back, why JFK won is that he looked better
on TV
during the debate with Nixon. Nixon was sick. He was sweating. And he lost.
He had a knee surgery, and
people who listened to the debate thought Nixon won.
Right.
People who watched it, which it was the first televised debate, were sure that Kennedy won.
Yeah,
and it helped him.
Well, and that's that. This will be a topic for a future episode. We're gonna try to get a couple folks on that talk about how candidates appeal and why the emotional appeal is so important. Because that's because people
are drawn to the cult of personality.
Yeah,
with candidacies, and that you could argue that happened with JFK for the first time. This young, vibrant, very good-looking senator from
the
state of Massachusetts.
Very different than Dwight Eisenhower.
Very, very different.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, fascinating stuff.
Lee Harvey Oswald was in fact a patsy. I believe that to my core. But this was a conspiracy, and it's, you know, the Stephen King goes into theories about what would the world look like had JFK not been assassinated. Impossible to know.
I mean, with Vietnam being what it was and what it is,
if we had not had Vietnam,
it's hard to know. Would we have avoided that? Maybe.
Yeah.
Or it might have been so big that we couldn't have.
We won't know.
So it was an interesting time. I'm glad you brought it up.
I'm glad
it was a good subject today because I've researched. I read all those books by Robert Caro, the Master of the Senate books.
Yeah. And,
you know, even our own Barry Goldwater said that there was nobody more corrupt than Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Right. That's exactly right.
As much as he despised Nixon, nobody was more corrupt than LBJ.
Yeah. Agreed. So, all right. Well, thanks for listening to our conspiracy theories.
Yeah, it's all good. And God bless America. Well, and we love America,
Mr.
CIA.
As Oliver Stone would say, it's not a conspiracy theory when it becomes a conspiracy fact.
Well, it's not misinformation when, you know, a year later it becomes agreed.
Yeah,
becomes true.
Well, and so, you know, I really do encourage people to read about the information that's come out in the last 20 years as a result of the release of stuff that was hidden for decades. I think it sheds a little bit of an interesting light.
And you can
on
draw
this.
Your own conclusions.
That's right. I've got mine. You can have yours.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, guys.
God bless.